Dynasty Refinery Podcast, your home of in-depth dynasty analysis with your host, Michael Royer, and co-host, Jared Fox. Prepare for content to drop in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Dynasty Refinery Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Royer. Joining me as always is my co-host, Jared Fox. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself, Mike?
I'm doing great. You know, new podcast, 2020. You know, 2019 was a great year. You know, we started the podcast off. You know, we all had a little bit of success here and there. But now we're all excited to get things going for 2020, making sure our pens aren't exploding, and just making sure that we are have you guys ready with all the information for this upcoming season.
I looked like I was attacked by a squid. What happened? There's black ink all over me right now.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
All right.
And it's not even kinky. I don't know.
So, today's podcast, what we want to talk about is we want to talk about the 2019 season. We want to talk about all the rookies from last year. Talked about some of the, you know, some of the pitfalls about, you know, our scouting process. Talk about some of the major hits. Talk about where these guys belong in the 2020 class, because everybody's super excited about that 2020 class. But in order to learn more and understand better drafting process, you need to understand what you did the year before. So jumping right into it, you know, I want to talk about obviously everybody's 101. When we deal with drafts and we talk about mock drafts, we always talk in the form of Superflex. You know, if you aren't playing Superflex, you need to get out there and do that, because it's obviously the future and what where everybody's doing. But the 101 for everybody was Kyler Murray. You know, Kyler Murray finished off as the QB6 overall last year. Hit 64% completion percentage, 3,722 yards, 20 touchdowns, 12 INTs, a little high, but he has that great floor of, you know, he had finished the year with 540 rushing yards and 4 touchdowns. Kyler Murray's a guy who, you know, I'm firmly invested in fantasy, a guy that I'm, you know, right now he's going as he was the QB6 this year. He's definitely in that top 7, top 8 for me. He's a guy that I want my quarterbacks not only to be able to throw it, but to have that nice rushing floor, and his rushing floor is above average.
Right, yeah, and the way that the NFL's trending now with all these quarterbacks, like, hybrid-type players like Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen's, and it seems like it's a smart investment. You know, maybe he doesn't pan out and turn into the next Lamar Jackson, but it just seems like such a smart investment. Go for the young guys that have a chance of breaking out in their sophomore year with that rushing floor, and, you know, he might even get a few receiving touchdowns. I don't know. These quarterbacks are doing it all these days, you know? Yeah. We watched a game the other day. You got Josh Allen scoring a receiving touchdown, throwing for almost 300 yards, and 100 yards rushing.
And an absolutely horrible play calling there at the end. It made me cry because I'm, you know, kind of a Bills fan. I'm also an Eagles fan. It was a horrible playoff weekend. We don't want to get into that.
I think everybody was crying a little bit. Everybody was pulling for the Bills. It's been too long for them.
Everybody's been a Bills fan. But back to Kyler Murray. I mean, you're looking at a floor of 6 points a week with just his rushing abilities, you know. And if you get no points per carry league, you know, he's getting, you look at that, that's about 6 carries a week. I mean, you're looking at a nice, solid floor. I think there's a lot of room for improvement. You know, 20 touchdowns and 12 INTs. He did struggle in the beginning. He had some ups and downs, you know, some rookie lumps here and there. But I feel like he's a guy that is not going to fall into what that is, that sophomore slump. You know, obviously that Baker Mayfield experience this year, and Darnold a little bit. Kyler Murray seems like a guy who is very safe, you know, in a startup. Probably should be in that top 8 quarterbacks taken. And he's a guy that I know you and I are both, you know, on board with right now.
Yeah, he's a multi-tool. So, I mean, you got to trust the talent there. He can do it all, and it's just it seems like a lot more of a risk these days to take traditional pro-style quarterbacks hoping that they'll pan out or break out than it is to take guys that at least have that rushing floor. Yeah. So, yeah, he worked out. He was the guy that everybody thought was the 101 last year, and it ended up that way, which is nice.
I'm coming around a lot on the, not necessarily the rushing quarterbacks, but quarterbacks that can at least run. You know, guys that, you know, the next guy we're going to talk about, Daniel Jones, you know, he ended up having 279 rushing yards and 2 rushing touchdowns. You know, just having that floor of adding in that rushing capabilities, guys that, you know, have that just, they don't have to be run first quarterbacks. You know, they have to be guys that still have the legs, that can still score the touchdowns. Aaron Rodgers back in the day was that way. Even, you know, Carson Wentz, Baker Mayfield, when those guys rushing for 30, 40 yards, just give you a little bit of an extra floor cushion. Daniel Jones, you know, who a lot of people, you know, that was one guy that I know our first startup that we did that this past year in the rookie draft, I got him at 206, you know, and a lot of people were even kind of mocking me there. But I was like, as soon as Daniel Jones gets a shot, yeah, that's his increase. His value is going to increase, and he's a guy who actually I think outperformed a lot of people's expectations in some manners. He threw for 3,000 yards, 24 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. The number that really sticks out to me is not the 12 interceptions, but he had 11 fumbles. You're looking at 23 turnovers in 12 starts. But he did have some monster games, you know, in 12 starts. He averaged 22 points a game, but in four of those games, he had four-plus touchdowns against the Bucks, the Jets, the Lions, and the Redskins, putting up 40 fantasy points a game. You know, I read the other day, Daniel Jones and Lamar Jackson were the only quarterbacks with multiple QB1 overall weeks. So that shows you his ceiling. On the flip side, the other eight starts, he had one touchdown or less and at least two turnovers in every single one of those games. So, you know, going forward, you know, is it the offensive line? Is it the weapons? You know, when Saquon was healthy, he put together a nice little stretch there. The Giants' offense could go either way here. I could see them drafting a guy like Jerry Jeudy or Lamb and having a, you know, a really rock-solid offense. Or I could see it being another, you know, sophomore struggle here for Daniel Jones because he's kind of in that in-between place. Where are you seeing him right now?
Well, I think, like a lot of people, I'm waiting to see what happens with the coaching situation because depending on who they bring in, you know, that might really change people's minds on how much interest they have in him. If they bring in, like, some kind of young, you know, innovative, offensive-minded type guy, people are going to want to get high on him. And I think it was nice that he showed a ceiling at least four times as a rookie. It's one of those things you want him to build consistency. And if he doesn't build consistency, then he'll pretty much be Eli Manning, like Everybody's always said, because that's how Eli was. He had big games and he did nothing. He was always up and down. Some years he was better than others, but it's tough for me. I like Daniel Jones. He definitely has raised in rankings, at least my personal rankings, since the draft last year. But I might not be as high on him as other guys, but I like Daniel Jones. I think he's interesting.
I think the interesting thing with Superflex right now is, like, who's that next mid-tier? You know, I said Kyler Murray's part of that top eight, but I feel like from 8 to, like, 18 is a very fluid position. You know, we don't know who's going to be taking those spots. A lot of things are going to be determined here in the offseason as far as, like you said, coaching, which is a great point. You know, as far as some of the weapons they get in, a lot of things, you know, there's a lot of maturing that goes on from year one to year two. Daniel Jones is a guy that I know a lot of people want to thrust in that back end QB1, early QB2 range. I'm not quite there yet, but there was definitely some good things to see there for year one. You know, obviously being the QB1 overall for 4 weeks was great. You know, he's a guy that you probably took in your Superflex league where you were banking on him to be your QB2, 3, 4. You know, you didn't want him to be your QB1, but now that we're in startup season, which everybody loves, you know, he's not a guy I'm comfortable attaching as a QB1 for me. You know, he's a guy, if I can get him as my QB2 when I have a rock solid guy, you're like, you know, if I have Patrick Mahomes, who I know is going to put up solid numbers every single week, and then Daniel Jones has that opportunity to get you some game winning weeks, whereas he might not, you know, you understand what I'm saying?
Like, he might be a matchup guy in the future. Yeah, definitely. He might be like a matchup guy that you just know coming into some weeks, you probably don't want to be starting him.
And that was the thing this year, I think, in Superflex. Seeing all the injuries, some of the old guys like Ryan Fitzpatrick just coming out there. I mean, Superflex is going to, there's a lot of matchup dependencies, you know, a lot of things like there. But these guys we want to talk about and just see where we think going forward. Another guy had very similar, you know, stat line, who just came out of nowhere, you know, took the league by storm with the mustache and, you know, all of his Gardner Minshew-isms. But yeah. Minshew, you know, his numbers, when you look at him compared to Daniel Jones, were very comparable. He had more yards, you know, 3,200 yards, 21 touchdowns, and only 6 interceptions. Also has that floor, which a lot of people don't realize, of rushing. 67 carries, 344 yards. You know, if I had asked you that ahead of time, I'm pretty sure most of us didn't realize that Gardner Minshew ran the ball as well as he did. You know, another thing, he had 7 fumbles, but the turnovers weren't quite as high as Daniel Jones. Gardner Minshew had what has to be a better rookie season than anybody could have fathomed. You know, everyone wanted Nick Foles to be the next guy. You know, everybody wanted him in there. And as soon as he came in, they tried to bounce it back, but eventually turned it back over to Gardner Minshew. And I feel like, you know, they haven't announced that he's the starter, but he's got to be the starter going into 2020.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, here it goes with Nick Foles again. He goes to a new place and he can't play anymore. You should just come back to the Eagles, Nick Foles, and be our backup so that when shit goes down like this past
week. What about Josh McMagic?
McMagic.
Yeah. Coined by Jared Fox. He texts him. He's like, McMagic. I think he looks a little bit more like Dolph Lundgren. You know, he looked a little on the old side. You know, it's the jaw. You know,
pulled a hammy when he made that throw. He was holding
nobody touched
his leg for the entire.
Honestly, like, this is another thing that I just love about football. But watching his press conference after the game, the dude's 40 years old. He's played on garbage teams his entire career. He got a shot. You know what I mean? And he put it all out there. But back to hopefully we get Nick Foles again. But I see Minshew as the starter going into 2020. Not a guy that I want to highly invest in here. You know, probably a second-round pick, maybe 2 second-round picks I would give for Minshew. But he's got some weapons there. You know, obviously, DJ Chark had a great year. Dede Westbrook kind of fell off. I think they're going to try to bring in a secondary receiver there. Fournette had a reemergence as a solid running back. The offense isn't bad there, and I think Minshew has the ability to be a guy who throws 30-plus touchdowns if given the right opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, Minshew looked good. I mean, he I don't know.
Much.
It's hard to disagree with a mustache like that, though.
It is sexy. It is sexy. Another guy who didn't play too sexy would be Dwayne Haskins, you know?
No.
The lowest completion percentage out of any of the starting quarterbacks, 58%. 1,300 yards, 7 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Does not quite, you know, he ran the ball 20 times for 100 yards, but nothing special there. Dwayne Haskins did play better down the stretch. You know, he was not given the same opportunity as Kyler Murray, you know, where some of these other quarterbacks. Very poor offensive line, you know, not a lot of weapons, even though Terry McLaurin really did establish himself as a good wide receiver this year. Dwayne Haskins struggled, but he played 2 or 3 games there down the stretch before getting injured that I thought showed some promise. The Washington offense, over the final 5 games, put up 24 points a game and 320 yards. Now they get Ron Rivera. You know, Ron Rivera has not been committed completely to saying Dwayne Haskins is a starter next year, but I feel like they have to give him the opportunity with the draft capital they put in there. But Ron Rivera is a guy who's, you know, done good things for quarterbacks, done good things for the offense. It's really going to, you know, bring some discipline to that team. And Haskins has to be a buy low, but I feel like I'm not giving up any first right now for Dwayne Haskins. But if you can get him for some seconds, he might have, you know, a bounce back season here.
I wasn't ever big on Haskins, and, you know, I'm still at the same place with him right now. I just don't like him very much as a quarterback. I think he's average, and it just kind of popped in my mind here. What if they bring in Cam Newton? Cam Newton could be on his way out.
There, yeah.
Yeah, what if they bring in a guy like Cam and say, hey, let's give Haskins a little more time to try to prepare to be an NFL quarterback, because he definitely wasn't ready this year. He wasn't ready. The team looked horrible. That was a horrible decision. Kind of like the Panthers did with Will Greer. Why did they put him in at the end of the year there? It was stupid. It completely crushed his confidence, I'm sure, and I don't know.
With Dwayne Haskins, the unfortunate thing was, you know, we had a coaching decision where they were going to fire him, and he basically even admitted that he started Haskins just to kind of prove a point because their coach, you know, he didn't want Haskins, you know, and that's a bad spot to be in. You know, it's hard enough being an NFL quarterback as a rookie trying to break your way in, but then put in a situation not to succeed, you know. Dwayne Haskins was a guy where, you know, he was going probably mid-first in rookie drafts, you know, and I know I took him at 106. I'm not against him here, but, you know, that's a bit of a pitfall, just trying to understand where your guys are at and what the situations look like. And, you know, I went more off of what his college production was more than what the situation necessarily was. But, you know, who knows what the future has in hold for him, but I'm buying on the cheap right now. The next guy we both love, we're both buying on the cheap, you know, and early on here at the Dynasty Refinery, he's our pick for a breakout quarterback, Drew Lock. You know, we all saw him rapping on the sidelines. He's bringing new life to Denver. 64% completion percentage out of all rookies, that's tied with Murray for the top. 1,000 yards in just 5 games, 7 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. He went 4-1 in those final 5 games. You know, he looked good. I think it was nice for him to just, you know, he was on IR with that thumb injury, just learning the offense. We all knew he was going to, you know, not be a guy that they throw in there day one. But he came out guns blazing, two touchdowns in the first quarter he played. You know, he's got great weapons with the emergence of Cortland Sutton. Looks like a legit wide receiver one. Fant is a locked and loaded tight end one. There's a lot of weapons there in Denver. Drew Lock is a guy who, you know, could be the best buy low out of any of these quarterbacks right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny. I actually said at the beginning of the year when we did a podcast that I thought San Francisco could be a sneaky team here. And for next year, I think I'm already declaring that I feel like Denver's going to be that sneaky team to be good next year. And, you know, be that emerging team. And I think that Drew Lock is going to help them win a lot of games. He seems the part. I comped him to Tom Brady a while ago and got my ass reamed out for that.
But they both have the same amount of playoff wins this year.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true. Big. It's something they have in common. But no, I love Lock. I think that he's the future of Denver, and he's probably, oh geez, he's really close to Daniel Jones. For me, I mean, I think Murray has established himself as the best quarterback out of this class, but like Locke and Daniel Jones right now for me are the, you know, 2A, 2B, I guess you'd say. And then
the nice thing is a lot of times understanding who you want out of this. I feel like you could probably get, you know, Drew Locke and a first for Daniel Jones right now. Like, I feel like there's that much of a separation.
Really?
where you know, if you get to the right owner, I feel like there in the community there's that much of a difference there.
I feel
there
like Drew Locke is hot enough, though, right now that he's not that far below. I don't know.
He's almost as hot as Hansel from Zoolander. Yeah. So hot right now.
And they're
now.
Both hotter than has-been Haskins.
Yep.
So.
Oh, all right. Oh. We got to go there. So the next position we're going to talk about is running back, you know, and it, Jared's the running back whisperer here, you know, and he was really hit.
Whisper.
You know, when it comes to things, his hit rate was really good when it came to the rookies as far as running backs. And when we talk about each one of these running backs, I want you to talk a little bit about, you know, what you saw in college and what, you know, what it translated to. Obviously, Josh Jacobs was the 101 in non-super flex leagues. He had 4.7 yards per carry this year, over 1,000 yards, actually over 1,100. 7 touchdowns, finished as the RB13 in points per game, so almost an RB1 at 19 points a game, 20 receptions, which to me seemed like a little bit of underutilization with the Raiders. Like, I feel like he easily could have been a 40, 50 catch kind of guy.
Yeah.
But I do think they showed that they wanted to pound the rock with Josh Jacobs, and it was not a timeshare. It was a Josh Jacobs as a feature back, you know, a guy who really they wanted to tote the rock 20 times a game. And he didn't disappoint. You know, I think it was a great first year. Right now, he's a guy who's going, you know, mid-second in startups. And I think that's deservedly so. What did you see out of Josh Jacobs, you know, from year one versus, you know, what we saw in rookie drafts?
Well, I mean, he was going 102 in the rookie drafts, 103 behind Harry in some situations. I don't know. I don't know which one of them was actually going first and most. I feel like after the actual draft went down, people were taking Jacobs 102. But, yeah, and that ends up being where he finished. He's probably the second most valuable rookie out of that class right now. And he looked good. He looked everything that people thought he was going to be, the guys that hyped him up. And, you know, I agree with you when I feel like he should have had more receiving yards and had more balls thrown his way. It was a little frustrating because I didn't understand it. The other running backs, when they played, they got catches. So it's not like it wasn't a scheme thing where they just don't throw to the running back. But like when DeAndre Washington and Rashard were in, they caught balls. So I'm hoping that he can dive into that role a little more where he catches some balls, because that'll make him elite. He's got the he's a good enough running back that he can definitely be like a top five dude if he catches balls. If not, he's, you know, a top 10 still.
Yeah.
So and that's moving forward. He's just an obvious, you know, just
he's a nice piece
set and forget a guy every week. He's a top 10 running back. He's young. They're going to build on that.
Yes.
I just have this good feeling about the way the Raiders are moving and their offense in years to come. I think they're going to be better. You know,
yeah.
They weren't that great this year. They were right in the middle.
Yeah, moving to Las Vegas here. Josh Jacobs is a guy we definitely want to bet on, you know, and
gamble,
I feel like
on that man.
Taking him in the second round, and he could have first round startup value easily. We talked about that earlier in the podcast where a guy has a good rookie season. If you don't buy him after that rookie season, he has a good second season, forget about it. You're not buying Josh Jacobs. You know, he's going to be only turning 22 years old. You know, he had a great first season. And, yeah, it was very frustrating watching DeAndre Washington come in and put up, like, 25 fantasy points catching 10 balls. You know,
yeah.
Like, why is Jacobs not more involved in that? Josh Jacobs is a very good pass-catching back. I feel like we're going to see more of that. I feel like they didn't really want to take the training wheels off completely in every aspect of the game, you know, and I feel like he's a three-down back that's just going to get you know, he's going to get the workload.
Right. I'm hoping a lot of it had to do with his injury, his shoulder injury that he had for most of the year, or half the year. I think that did limit him a little. He was over 5 yards a carry for most of the year. Like, it was something ridiculous, like 5.2 for, like, the first half. And then he dropped off slightly, ended 4.75 yards a carry after the second half of the year where he played through that shoulder injury, and then he missed some games. So it's like, you can only go up with him. I mean, we could sit here and just praise Josh Jacobs for days.
We'll do that on another podcast. We're trying to keep it a little more concise. Miles Sanders, the guy who, you know, early part of the season, rookie drafts, I wasn't wild about him. You know, I mean, being a Penn State fan, obviously we've all heard, you know, he was behind Barkley and, you know, had that opportunity for breakout for his last year. Miles Sanders looked like he was that kind of running back in the beginning of the year, where he didn't have as much experience and looked like a guy who really had to learn the NFL game and learn pass protection. That was one thing he really struggled with early. But towards the end of the year, I mean, he looked right up there with Josh Jacobs. You know, he finished with 818 rushing yards, 500 receiving yards on 50 catches. That was what was huge and really propelled him into, you know, fantasy RB2 status down the stretch. 4.5 yards per carry. Miles Sanders looked a bit of a three-down back, you know, and I think the emergence of Boston Scott is going to actually help Miles Sanders down the stretch, because early part in the season, I'm thinking, you know what, the Eagles are probably going to draft another running back, you know, to complement him. But Boston Scott played so well down the stretch, and everybody, you know, loved what he did in the playoffs and everything like that. I think they got a nice 1-2 punch there where, yeah, the Eagles might take a flyer on a fourth, fifth, sixth round back, but I don't think they're going to be really investing in anything heavily, and it's Miles Sanders' show in 2020.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he's only going to build upon it. He really kicked in when they had nobody else to go to, you know? DeSean Jackson went out. Alshon was out. Ertz was missing time and banged up.
That could be another podcast of all the guys who were out for the Eagles, but, you know, it was sad, but
he really did step in and he looked great. I mean, that 500 receiving yards, that's crazy.
And 50 catches. I mean, yeah. We were talking about floors with our, you know, our super flex quarterbacks being able to rush, but the floor, you know, a receiving floor of 50 receptions and 500 yards, I mean, that makes it where he can have a very average rushing record and still be a quality running back. You know, where 50 catches, that's legit as a rookie.
Yeah.
The next guy, not quite as productive, obviously. You know, I know a guy I know you loved coming out, struggled a little bit, looked a little bit better down the stretch, but we're looking at David Montgomery, you know, with 3.6 yards per carry. Finished the year with 889 yards. You know, he had the same amount of carries as Jacobs, leading all rookies with 242. Six touchdowns, and believe it or not, actually caught 25 passes. But finished as the RB27. I know, you know, coming out of the combine, he was a guy that didn't have the flashiest numbers. You know, had a ton of broken tackles. Looked like he struggled in the NFL game. You know, looked like maybe that athleticism, being able to break those tackles with now much more elite defenders, might have cost him a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, I was hesitating there. I was thinking about him. I was just thinking back to, like, seeing David Montgomery on this, like, hard-hitting Bears team, and the Bears just weren't who I thought they would be this year. Yeah, it did, because I was like, they'll let their defense win games. They'll give Montgomery the ball every play. We knew he wasn't a big play guy. Yeah. You know what I mean? We knew that. But we also figured, like, he could be almost like a Derrick Henry type guy, where you give him the ball 25 times a game, he wears teams down, he scores touchdowns. You really don't have to take him off the field. They just weren't a good team in general this year. If they bounce back and they play the way they want to, running the ball and stay committed to David Montgomery like they were in the second half of the year more so, I think that he could still be a good, productive back. But the RB1 that I originally thought he was, I feel like I was maybe a little off after seeing him his rookie year. Just, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he had some games where he looked, you know, fairly decent. There was a lot of games where he had it, you know, looking at games like the Giants, 13 carries, 22 yards, you know, 1.7, you know, a lot of really low yards per carry, mixing in some touchdowns. Obviously, he's a guy that I think is a cheap buy low right now, because his touchdowns should increase. You know, I think that offense has nowhere to go but up if Mitch Trubisky figures out how to be a quarterback. you know, but that's a tricky situation.
It is.
The next running back, kind of little bit lower on everybody's, you know, radar coming into the draft. He was going mid-second to maybe even late second. Again, same kind of mold as David Montgomery as far as not flashy combine numbers, which, man, I can't wait for the combine this year, by the way.
No.
But, you know, Devin Singletary led all rookies at 5.13 yards per carry. Caught 29 catches, you know, another solid high floor there for 194 yards, two touchdowns. 775 rushing yards. He finished with as the RB26, you know, in a role where the Bills weren't ready. I mean, the Bills' technical RB1 is Josh Allen. We all know that, you know. And this could be a situation where I was talking with my friend where the Bills' offense is kind of like Ravens light, where Josh Allen's running the ball and Devin Singletary's kind of in that Mark Ingram role. Devin Singletary's a guy I think is very buy low candidate where you could easily get him for a late first, maybe even an early second in this class when it comes down to draft time, where, you know, I have to believe that he's the starter come day one for Buffalo this year.
Right. And that's a situation that's going to need to be monitored because I've heard a lot of speculation that people think they're going to take a running back just to, you know, be that kind of team that runs the ball. They have a good defense. I would have no problem seeing that with Frank Gore on his way out if they wanted to get like a first and second down back. Because Singletary is the exact opposite of David Montgomery. He's that big play guy. He's not a three down back. He's a third down back, you know?
Well, the thing with him was, it's like he's very shifty and elusive.
Yeah.
Montgomery was breaking through tackles.
He had more big plays, I think, than anybody in the league when it came to just like the few amount of touches he had and how many big runs he popped off.
The pitfall for us as drafters and analysts is that he ran like a 4.65 at the combine, you know, which you don't assume a guy that's running in the 4.6 is going to be a guy who's going to be a big playmaker. But he is very elusive, can stop on a dime. You know, he has some of those same kind of moves as McCoy did, you know, as another Bills running back there, but just not that same kind of explosive speed. But he showed that he can make guys miss and, you know, is definitely worth being on your fantasy roster and a guy that, you know, could put up solid RB2 production, you know, given what happens here.
In a solid emerging offense.
Yep.
And that's important. And that's why people are investing in Ravens players. You know what I mean? Like, you got to look at those young offenses that are on their way on the up and up and just invest in those guys. If
that's
for
what
no
saying.
Other
you
reason.
Get, it's a cheaper option there because I feel like they're trying to build their offense like the Ravens.
I'm not giving up a late first yet for him, but I'm definitely, if somebody wants to take a late second, you know, during the draft, I'd have no problem giving that up for Devin Singletary.
See, I feel like people are, this year's draft, and our next episode, you guys are going to love it. It's a 2020 way too early mock draft. People are falling in love with these rookies already. I've been in love with them for a year and a half here and just gushing about them. But I mean, Devin Singletary is a guy where you're going to start comparing some of these guys versus this year's rookie class. And I would say Josh Jacobs would probably be maybe he's the RB2 or 3 this year, but none of these other guys are in the top 5 running backs, you know, if we were combining the two drafts. So people are going to want to get into this draft, and that gives you an opportunity where, you know, at the end of the draft, we might get into 110 and someone's like, yo, I'll give you my 2021 first and Singletary to get in here, you know.
Right.
Be open to those kind of things. A lot of people late in that 2020 first round are going to want to get in there. 2021 class is going to be great too. I mean, there's a lot of really up-and-coming elite athletes coming out. Elite athletes, that's our next topic, obviously, is wide receivers. We both loved this guy at different points, and then we didn't, and then we did, and now we both do. You know, DK Metcalf, even though he killed the Eagles in that last game, 100 targets on the year, 58 catches, 900 yards. You know, he really, 7 touchdowns, 19% target share. He emerged as, you know, Russell Wilson's go-to guy down the stretch. Tyler Lockett obviously had another great year. I can't believe how just efficient Russell Wilson is throwing to him. But he showed that he was really ready to give DK Metcalf a shot. You know, DK Metcalf finished as a high-end wide receiver 3, as the wide receiver 28 overall. Sky's the limit. You know, I feel like he's going to be a guy who's going to be a solid wide receiver 2 for years, might throw in an occasional wide receiver 1 season. But I think DK Metcalf has the right stuff, you know, and he has that great attitude where he has a chip on his shoulder from everybody that didn't draft him.
Yeah, and I'm going to disagree. I think he's destined to be a wide receiver 1. I really do. And I could see him being at the bottom end of, like, the top 10 receivers and just maybe even higher, dude. I mean, he's got all the right credentials. He looks like Julio out there. He really does. He's a mammoth of a man. Everybody knows that. I mean, he struggled a little bit at times with – he had a few drop balls. I remember watching one against the Eagles mm-hmm. where he dropped in the end zone. And in the beginning of the year, he struggled a little bit. But he had a lot of red zone targets. And he led the league at one point. He probably finished in the top five in red zone targets or close to it. But that's promising to me because that tells me he was getting open. You know what I mean? Like, he was getting open. So next year, he's a totally – a guy that I'm investing in. I mean, I wish we didn't do the podcast so I didn't, you know, have to tell people that and then miss out on him in my league. it's that much of like a love that I have for DK Metcalf at this point. Love him.
Do you know who everybody loves right now?
I do know who everybody loves.
AJ Brown. Yep. You know, AJ Brown right now, he finished the season and he was on my Scott Fishbowl team.
Brown Town.
You know, he almost took me. I was 4 points away from going to the finals. You know, 4 points. Could have been raising that belt this week, but anyways.
I know.
AJ Brown, 81 targets, 52 receptions, over 1,000 yards. You know, he was number five in the league with 465 yards after carry, 8 touchdowns. He became what we wanted Corey Davis to be for so long, you know, because Ryan Tannehill became what we wanted Marcus Mariota to be. And, you know, I mean, slight touch there. Ryan Tannehill really became a great QB2 for super flex teams. Like, he's the kind of guy who just propelled people into the playoffs because they were not expecting those kind of numbers.
Yeah.
But AJ Brown right now finished as the wide receiver 21. And right now, believe it or not, he's actually going, according to DLF in January, at the end of the second in startups already. Right after one pick behind Amari Cooper and in between Kenny Galladay. You know, you and I both said, you know, I know we talked about when we did our draft, AJ Brown would be the, you know, one or maybe even the second pick based off of talent. And this is one pitfall that I really just want you guys to avoid. Talent wins out. You know, we said AJ Brown would be our 101, 102, 103 at worst. And then he went to Tennessee and we're like, oh, Mariota. And then you saw him in drafts going 108, 110. You know, I even saw him go as late as 201 in a draft. I mean, that if you did that, you were stealing
because
you trusted
I had,
the value.
Yeah, I think I had this, like, thing in my head where I was like, well, he went to Tennessee, and Corey Davis is still waiting for his chance to break out in Tennessee. So, you know, A.J. Brown's going to be waiting his turn. They had just signed white receiver, what's his name? I don't even remember. But it seemed like a bad storm for him, and he completely proved us wrong there.
Now, white receiver, what's his name, was Adam Humphries.
Adam Humphries, there we go. I'm just raging about.
No, and that's great. No, that Brown's sometimes great. We got to think about those kind of things, and you and I were talking about A.J. Brown being right up there with N'Keal Harry as the best wide receiver, you know, coming out. We said, but he was a better route runner and more athletic. We both thought that. And then it was like the draft rolled around and we're like, you know, if he had gone to San Francisco, he was the 102, 103, you know, because that's where when you and I were watching the draft, they were like, we'll talk about the next guy when they take Debo. But where do you feel like AJ Brown should, I mean, do you feel comfortable investing a second round startup pick in the likes of Kenny Galladay, Cooper Kupp, and Amari Cooper?
Probably not. I probably wouldn't take him in the second round. Maybe in the third. I don't know. We'd have to see who all is available. But I think he is being valued very high right now, but at the same time, I understand it, and I realize he could be a second-round value. I just don't think there's much meat on the bone, you know, after that. He would have to turn into a first-round type of, I don't know. It's a tough situation, but I mean, I think a lot of the leagues that you see, I don't know if he's going to go in the second round.
Yeah. During startup season, it's very difficult because we all want to jump on that big rookie season.
Yeah. You know, he's hot right
and
now.
And if you jumped on Baker's big rookie season, you took him at the end of the first, early second, and you're upset about it. You know, if you took Juju after the big rookie season, you know, there's a lot of guys. It can be peaks and valleys. AJ Brown definitely has the talent. He's the guy that, if I took him on a rookie draft, I'm excited. But I'd rather take a guy three rounds later in Debo Samuels right now. Debo almost had identical stats aside from the touchdown. You're looking at 84 targets, 57 receptions. That's identical. 800 yards. He had a couple rushing touchdowns. And he was number four in the league in yards after catch. You know, Debo was a playmaking machine. It's just you're looking at a difference of the touchdowns. He had three instead of eight. You know, Debo Samuels is a guy that I think San Francisco brings in another wide receiver, obviously, but he had all the makings of a solid, you know, wide receiver one, wide receiver two in this league, where Deebo Samuels has all the capable skills, very similar to A.J. Brown, maybe not quite as athletic, but just when the ball's in his hands, he makes things happen.
Yeah. Yeah, Deebo's definitely the better value of the two.
Yeah. Another guy came out of the woodworks that we both liked because he had a great, you know, we were like, oh, he's going to be with Dwayne Haskins. You know, he blew up at the combine as far as, or he, not the combine, but his numbers as far as, you know, that 4.3 speed. But no one expected this. You know, Terry McLaurin, 58 receptions, 919 yards, you know, 7 touchdowns, and a 19% target share as a rookie. I feel like he fell into a perfect storm. You know, I mean, I do think he's a good, solid wide receiver. He's probably overdrafted right now, but he's a guy who, you know, really, if you took him, you probably got him in the third round of your rookie draft. And he's a guy where, you know, you got to look at what he did at Ohio State. He had a good, you know, good final season there. He had great athleticism numbers, and he kind of fell down the charts a little bit and became a steal. We all got to look at for those kind of guys when it comes to our rookie drafts.
Yeah, because you probably would have gotten him in the third round of a rookie draft last year, and he definitely would be a first-round pick if you redid it. He'd probably be towards the end, you know, mid-end, but yeah, he'd be a first-round pick. He looked good. I don't think there's any reason to necessarily, you know, say stay away from him, or right. You know, he's a fast, young, I don't know.
I'm not paying a first round for him. I know a lot of people would say, I heard on a podcast the other day, say that they would give up the 101 for him. And I'm like, I can't do it with this class. You know, there are
the 101.
10, yeah.
That 10, is madness.
10, 12 guys that I would clearly rather have over him, even now that we know what he is. But another guy, another wide receiver who started out just on fire and just fizzled out by the end. But, you know, we had both talked about this guy being undersized, being a speedster, and just, you know, if he gets beat up, it's going to be tough, you know, because learning how to play in the NFL. But Marquise Brown, you know, Hollywood, had 46 receptions for 584 yards, 7 touchdowns. The biggest, you know, disappointment there was, you know, once he got banged up a little bit, those final 5 games of the season, 11 catches, 56 yards in 5 games with only 1 touchdown. So he started out on fire. You know, he had that first game on 12 targets. He had like 2 touchdowns with 200 yards and was really stretching the field there for Lamar Jackson. Hollywood Brown's a guy where we're going to see more of, you know, we're going to see more of the flashes, or we're going to see more of the fizzles.
Personally, I think you're going to see more flash from him just because of the offense he's in. And I think he's going to get better. I really like the way he started the season out. I think he was banged up for a lot of the season. That had to – I mean, he missed games, so we know he was banged up. And that, I feel like, played a factor. He could always be a bit of an injury risk. I hate that I'm always the injury risk guy. You're but I always
I
like
start
to –
talking about injuries if you want. You know what I mean?
You should be, because I'm always stressing on these injury risks, and then, like, dudes just blow up and don't get injured, and it's like, yeah. But anyways – a small guy like that. I mean, look at Deshaun Jackson. He missed time throughout his career, and they're pretty much the same type of player. But I think he does have a Deshaun Jackson type of ceiling if he stays healthy and everything goes as is planned. I mean, they're why not? They don't have
the right
a better receiver
be.
Than him.
You want to be? I do feel like Baltimore brings in another guy, but I mean, yeah, absolutely. The next guy, again, very high on Mecole Hardman. Probably got him at the end of the first. And then Tyreek Hill came back, and it felt like it was a big stretch. Like, oh, man, I think I overpaid for this guy. But he showed some flashes. I mean, the guy's electric. On only 41 targets, he had 26 receptions, 538 yards, and 6 touchdowns. You know, that's very comparable to what Marquise Brown did on double the targets. Sammy Watkins, bye-bye. You know, this was the make-or-break year for Sammy Watkins, and he's in the opt-out year. I can't see Kansas City bringing him back. You know, he struggled.
Officially putting the bus stamp on
him. I feel like Sammy Watkins' did I say Sammy Watkins' butt?
I think you said butt.
I mean, it is nice as well.
That's
but he,
for the other
it
show,
was,
Mike.
It was, yeah, the Dynasty Refinery After Dark, you know. You guys are going to turn into that one. But, you know, we're looking at, I think he's gone, and I think Mecole Hardman ascends into that, you know, wide receiver two role for them. Now, obviously, Kelsey's technically the wide receiver one there, but 1A, 1B with Hill. But I think Hardman really steps in next year to his own. And, you know, I saw today that Patrick Mahomes has 28 deep ball touchdowns in the last 2 years, which no one's even close to that. And if you got a guy that can take the top off the defense, again, another reference towards our Dynasty Refinery After Dark. But Mecole Hardman is going to be a guy who I think blows up next year.
Yeah, and all the everything's going to set in line. It's the Chiefs, man. Like, they can feed as many receivers as you need them to. I mean, they could support wide receiver one and tight end one numbers for Tyreek and Kelsey and have Mecole Hardman be a wide receiver too, because guys are going to double team Tyreek, you know, just like we saw in Tampa Bay when they double team Evans, and that opens it up for Godwin. Same thing could happen with Hardman. And I just feel like he's one of those dudes that next year could break out, come out of nowhere. Like you said, Sammy's probably out, like you said, and he is officially a bust.
Yep.
Or something about his butt.
And another guy who I don't want to put in a bust yet, but some other guys I want to touch on here from the rookie classes. You know, I love N'Keal Harry coming out of college, you know, and his profile was fantastic. He's not a guy I'm ready to put a bust label on yet. You know, obviously, he struggled with a little bit of injuries. It didn't look like Tom Brady really trusted him when it came down to it. But he's a guy who, you know, projects to be a solid wide receiver. I thought in that Patriots offense, he really would have ate. You know, I thought he was going to be a red zone target with Gronk gone and nothing really in the red zone. But N'Keal Harry, right now, you could buy on the cheap.
Yeah, and we can't really say much until we know what's going on with the quarterback situation and everything in New England. But, yeah. We'll talk about him more.
Yep. Other guys I want to touch base on, obviously, the two Iowa tight ends. Fant looked fantastic. Hockenson looked fantastic. Both those guys are going to be in that mid-tight end one for me in the dynasty world here for the next, you know, 5, 6, 7 years.
Agreed. Haku's a great guy to go out and trade for because he did look bad in some games. Mm-hmm. He had some injuries this
both
year,
of them
but
are fairly,
he's going to be good.
Both of them are fairly affordable right now, which is surprising because they're both extremely young, talented tight ends. And, you know, aside from the big three, I mean, I feel like they got to be right up there.
And Fant scared me at the beginning of the year. He had some drops and some issues, and, man, he looked bad. But when he turned it on, he looked good.
He looked
and
good
he finished
with
year strong.
You know,
he did.
Had some really
he
big.
Did.
In tight end premium, you know, he was all worth – you know, a late first. Some guys that didn't have a promising rookie season. With all the injuries in Philadelphia, it was mind-blowing to me that J.J. Arcega, you know, once he started going with that, Arcega Whiteside really just, I don't know if he didn't grasp the NFL game. I don't know if, you know, it was his route tree was too limited. I don't know if there was some games where it looked like Wentz, he was in the wrong spot. You know, we all saw that. Wentz looked great down the stretch and was throwing to people off the street.
Greg Ward, man.
You know, like people, converted quarterbacks and people that were on practice squads. And we're talking about second round J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, who was drafted above D.K. Metcalf. I mean, what's the future outlook there? I mean, we all thought Alshon was going to be in the way, but Alshon didn't play. And J.J. just didn't.
Yeah, I know. It was disappointing. And like we had said on earlier podcasts, he was an older rookie too.
Yeah.
You would have thought he was ready to step in, and if he needed to take a role year one, he would, and he didn't. So it was disappointing. As an Eagles fan, it was disappointing. I think people are a little higher on him than they should be.
Absolutely. Well, that's a wrap here for our, you know, 2000 rookie review, rookie rewind, whatever you want. We just wanted to kind of rewind. There you go. It's getting a little crazy here. But you know, you can tell Jared and I throughout the whole thing wanted to start talking about 2020 players because we're just so excited about that. But we wanted to talk about the 2019 class, not just about the players, but some of our evaluations and why they might have been wrong, why they might have been right. You know, we have a very high hit rate when it comes to rookie drafts. You know, both of us had a very high success this year. And, you know, when it comes to drafting rookies and when it comes to playing Dynasty. Tune in next week. You know, we're going to be looking at doing a 2020 rookie mock, which is, you know, way too early. There's going to be a lot of things going on.
Way too early.
We're super excited.
We're out of our
that.
Minds.
So, once again, thank you for tuning in to the Dynasty Refinery Podcast. We want you guys to wake up, rise, and refine those Dynasty rosters.
Oh, yeah.